Zion. Oh, hallelujah.
You only have 6 days left to be entered into the CIUT 89.5 FM Grand Prize Draws.
Get your pledges paid today to be entered into two draws.
You could win a two-night stay for two people at the Briars Resort on Lake Simcoe.
Or an Urbanite 20-something bicycle from Urbane Cyclist.
To pay your pledge or find more information, go to www.ciut.fm.
CIUT 89.5 FM, celebrating 25 years from the roots up.
From the roots up. CIUT 89.5 FM, Toronto.
Hi, welcome to Evidence, CIUT 89.5 FM. I'm Ted Proff.
And I'm Roshanik Jabari.
Later on in the show, we'll be talking to dance artist Erin Dace Trudell, originally from Toronto and now living in Montreal, and the founder of Mama Dancers, whose primary focus is bringing mothers and their babies together in dance. And she'll also be talking about her Skinner Release workshop taking place as part of the AT Technique classes at Dover Court House. The first up is Pia Bauman, and with her are students from the Pia Bauman School of Ballet and Creative Movement. Harmony Jagla and Effie McMurtry, welcome all three of you to Heavy Dance.
Thank you, Ted. It's great to be here again.
For those who don't know, and how could they not, tell us a bit about Pia Bauman, the school.
Pia Bauman School, well, I'm sorry it has my name, but it has been that way for a long time. actually, since the school. The school is one of the few charitable not-for-profit schools in the area of Toronto, Greater Toronto Area. I don't really know how far we reach, which really means that we take a very special position. We have the philosophy that everybody who wants to can dance, and everybody who wants to and does not have the means should have at least be given the possibility to dance.
I think we're having a slight problem at the moment.
Oh, okay.
So I'll check your mics. Effie, is your mic working okay? And maybe start with you.
Okay. Is it working? Alrighty.
Okay. Okay. So
perfect.
Tell us a bit about yourself before you got into Pia, and then your experience in Pia.
Well, I started dancing at the studio when I was 3, so I guess part of the appeal was that kind of, for little girls, there's always that appeal of frilly pink tutus and such, but after the first few years, I realized that this was something that I really enjoyed doing, and continued on, and I'm now in my 15th season, and my 11th Nutcracker, and it's been wonderful, and the training is fantastic, and yeah, it gives me an opportunity to do what I love. So,
how do you feel that doing this affects, say, your studies, your organizational abilities, and others? Does it have an effect in other aspects of your life, doing these dancing in general?
Well, it certainly teaches you how to manage your time between rehearsals. I think after, mainly through rehearsal process, it makes me more professional person, I guess, in other aspects of life. I mean, especially around this time, it is frantic, and it does have some effect on other things. But, it really, really gives us the ability to be more professional people.
Okay. Now, what part are you playing in this year's Nutcracker?
On two of the nights, I am dancing the role of the Snow Prince, or Snow Cavalier, as we call it. And on the other two nights, I'm dancing the new role of the court jester, which is an amalgamation of, we used to have a master of ceremonies in the entire second act, and then in the acrobat scene, there was a, what we called Mère and Père Gigogne, and now Père Gigogne and the master of ceremonies have been transformed into one very fun role of the court jester.
Wow.
Which we find is a little more magical. So.
Okay. Harmony. Again, how a bit about your background and then how you got into the Pia Bauman School.
Well, all my friends when I was really little, like 3 years old too, they would always have something that they would love to do, and I wanted to try something new, so I went to Pia Bauman School. And since I was 3 years old, I've been dancing there. And I found that I really, really like it. And it's also very fun, and I learn a lot. And yeah.
And how do you then work in managing your time and stuff? We had one of, I think it was your or Elizabeth Dawn Snell artist play, and she actually said it made me help me in multitasking. I thought that was a really good response, because literally in dance, in the training, you do all this sort of.
Yeah, it does help me in multitasking. Like when I have a lot of homework, but I also have rehearsal. Usually, a lot of people would say that I couldn't do all that, but I can because of dance, because with dance you have to act too, not just dance, which is multitasking, and yeah, it really helps.
And I remember the days, Pia, when dancers didn't do much acting, and if they did, it was not very good, and now it's been part of their training, and everything's coming out just
it's
far
so differently. It's so as part of training, because dance is a language without words, so you have to do much more than perform steps and what I call the cheap tricks. You have to embed even the smallest movements, the smallest actions of hand or foot or face, with a meaning. You have to embed it with some kind of intent and meaning that can clarify a story or an emotion or a feeling. And it's important. And our kids are just amazing in that. They really feel that, they understand that, and they talk literally with hands and feet and no voice.
And I'm curious to know, after doing it for 26 years.
This is the 26th.
That's amazing. How do you do it in a way that's different and refreshing every year?
Well, it's not difficult. First of all, the story it's an easy story and is very accessible. And as our own kind of insight in human nature deepens, we can dig more into the story and tell more without becoming psychological or complex. It is just a very human little story. And the dancers I work with are every year different. So they throw in a whole different quality. Which I would love to use. I would like to be able to say, well, this person really has a wonderful run or a wonderful leap, and she can use her hands beautifully, so let's do that. When I introduced, when we had our big meeting, the Nutcracker meeting with all the parents and the dancers, that when we were embarking on this year, I said, this is the first Nutcracker after 25 years. And that's how it feels. And it feels like that for me, and I think for everybody in partaking.
That's amazing. And now, Effie, you mentioned that this is your 11th Nutcracker. Mm-hmm. So you've sort of grown up at the school. And so how has it been for you starting the Nutcracker when you were younger and now dancing it? Now, how has it changed for you in terms of your dancing and...
Well, complex question. I guess it's a learning experience to grow through the roles. I mean, when I started, I was 7-ish, I guess, as one of the little mice. So basically, your entire show is running on, doing some jumps around, and crying when the Mouse King dies. but it's neat the way, because you get to experience so many different characters and to have so many opportunities to go from, you know, Little Mouse to a child guest to Arabian dancer, whatever, on and on and on. And as your technique grows, you get to, I guess, explore these new characters. And so it's quite fun in that.
That's great. And the Harmony, did you mention how long you've been dancing with the school?
I've been dancing since I was 3, and I've been doing the Nutcracker since I was about 6 or 7, like Effie.
And how old are you now?
I'm 12.
Okay, so that's a quite number of years as well. So how's it been for you?
It's being really cool. Like how Effie said, I was a little mouse because they need an extra, so I was a little, and I was so excited because I would always watch it. I watched it since I was three, and I would always come, and the mice were actually my favorite part. So I was really excited to be one, even though it was just jumps, maybe a couple spring points, and running along. I was really excited, and now this year I'm Clara, so there's a big difference between jumping and then almost being there the whole show. But it's a great experience, and it's really fun to watch.
Oh, that's great. So you get to, as you grow older with the school and with the production, you get to dance different characters, and that's wonderful. And it's a huge production. There is over 100 dancers, 1,000 costumes,
thousands
and props.
Of costumes. Well, hundreds of costumes and if we count the props, we probably come That's close to 1,000
wow.
tidbits coming from the ribbons of the children's hair to the masks for the little mice. I think the last costume bit that dates back to the first year are the masks that the little mice wear. That concept has stayed the same. But so over the years, of course, the costumes do change and get renewed and get revamped. And so this year with the new parts for the Jester, things have become different. The Clara dress, there's the dress that Harmony will wear,
oh.
and it also has a story to tell. It has been in use for ages, and the little girl that wore it for the first time had been very, very sick, and it was fantastic when she could become the Clara because it was a very special, it had a very special meaning, and we still have that same dress. So from a costuming and prop point of view, every bit has a bit of a, well, has a history, not a bit, it has 25 years of history.
Wow.
dancers, yes, we have over 100 dancers. That includes the parents that are participating. We have a genuine grandfather who is the grandfather of Clara number 2. We have a father who is the father of Fritz this year. We have some members of the board of directors that are dancing.
Wow.
We have a babe in arms in one particular show on the Saturday afternoon. So in the first act, which is a part that I find very important, is to stress the fact that this is about a family party. And
it's very interactive with the audience.
So it is. Mm-hmm. It is. Well, in the opening, when the actual dancing starts, but in the opening, there's interaction and the lights are half on. The theater curtain is never closed until it falls on the end of the snow.
And is this the first year that you're doing it with this approach, this interactive approach?
No, this was really from the beginning.
Okay.
Because the very first Nutcracker was performed in a parish hall in Parkdale, in a really seedy area of Parkdale at that time. And the parish hall was one of those old ones that had a balcony that was in the shape of a horseshoe. And the props came, the sets came down from the balcony. It was open, there was no stage. So I thought, well, logic is to just have people come in and say, oh, hello, welcome to come to our party. And that's.
So they're not necessarily a spectator, and they feel like they're part of the...
They feel like they're part of it.
Oh, yes, and I can speak from experience as an audience member. They really do, and all the little children running through the theater, the babies crying, the grandmothers talking. It is a total community feel to it. It feels like you're in a home or someplace. It just has this feel that you don't get at watching the National Ballet or something.
Yeah, no. And that is so important. And then what I love about it is that in the second act, it is totally different. The audience is privileged to see inside the dream of now 2 children. And there is this real separation of the 2 main characters and the characters on stage. And the audience just sits on the outside looking in.
Oh, okay.
So, yeah.
And I should mention that the auditorium at Humberside is absolutely fantastic. It has group of 4 paintings.
Group of 7.
Group of 4. Wait, a group of 4. That's a political site. group of seven. And it just has a feel almost like a church at times.
It's very beautiful. It has a mural by Lismer, and it's absolutely gorgeous. Yeah, and some stained glass windows and beautiful.
So you probably go right into production or preparing for next season, because it's a huge task. How soon after do you start to think about next year? And
After we are done, I throw it out of my brain
for a while,
for
a long while,
until August, end of August.
Okay,
end of August, I start to think about it, mm-hmm. and. It sort of starts to pop up, like, you know, like seeds. And and then you just go hard and heavy into it in September. Mm-hmm. That's when auditions start, the third week in September. And rehearsals begin on the Sunday after Thanksgiving. I never have anything prepared in terms of choreography. You know, there may be bits and pieces that are maintained from a year before or coming back from 10 years ago. But everything gets approached just at the moment. I'm not someone who can sit behind a table and plan and draw. I see a harmony, and I see an Effie, and I see, you know, how their faces can go, how they dance, how they move, how their musicality is, and we take it from there.
That's great. And just to sort of jump a little bit, actually, to your school, because there's something interesting. You offer a bursary program.
Yes, we do. So the school is a charitable, not-for-profit mm-hmm. organization. The mandate is is very important. It basically states that every child who wishes to dance, who wishes to create, and who wishes to be a performer of dance should be given the chance to do so. So the idea is that we really need to open up art and dance as one of the expressions of art to the larger community, to families that are economically in less proficient situations, and if a child really wants to dance, then they should be able to do that. And so Nutcracker is really part of that mandate, because if a child is 7 years old and really would like to have a taste of dancing, and you don't know if it's going to stay, but at that point this is important to be a mouse, then you should give that chance. And it is a memory that will last forever. It's very important for a 7-year-old. Mm-hmm. For a 16-year-old who really has potential, and there's no way, and no way that her parents could afford the 8-9 hours of dance per week, you say, well, there's a bursary. So it cuts right across from the early dance children to the older dancers, and you can achieve as much as you want to achieve during the time that you are dancing.
That's so great, yeah. To have the opportunity to present that opportunity to young dancers and opening it up to everybody, really.
Yeah.
So it's not exclusive for people who can afford dance.
Yeah, exactly.
and training.
Yeah, and because by nature, it needs time, it needs instruction. By nature, it's expensive.
Right.
So, yeah, it's important.
And you also have a Young and Movement Incorporated Dancing, the YMI professional company?
Company, yes. And that.
And Harmony and Effie, are you in that?
I'm in it. I'm not sure about Effie. Yes, she is too.
So Harmony, being part of the company, does it give you? I know you're young right now, but have you thought about what you'd like to do with dancing in the future? Do you want to continue dancing? Do you want to be a professional dancer? Do you have other interests that you want to pursue?
Well, I definitely want to continue dancing for as far as the school goes. Most likely, I would like to try to continue dancing like after high school, if it works out. I will still love it, and I like to sing, kind of, but I don't really know. That's like my other interest, but
that's good. That's good. They complement each other.
Yes.
So you can see yourself on Broadway one day. How about for you, Effie? has it been dancing in the company? And what do you see? Where do you see yourself?
Dancing in the company is fantastic because it gives you a whole nother level of training. So with Nutcracker and with the ballet classes, you get your classical technique, but then with the company, it's mostly contemporary. In a while with dance, I'm actually applying to theater schools right now, so the dance training is helping quite a bit. We'll open more opportunities for a few more auditions, I guess. Yeah.
That's great.
Okay. Now, I'd like to get back to the costumes and everything, because you've been on before talking about how the whole community gets involved in the making, the sewing, etc. How far ahead and how involved are they? Even during the production, there's rips, there's tears.
Very much during the production. We have, whole hierarchy, I guess you could say, of helpers, starting with, well, as artistic director, I call the shots, so to say. I can say, well, I really don't like this dress any longer. Please, we have to change it. And then it does get changed. And sometimes I have to stamp my feet, but it happens. So it starts with me, and then there are coordinators. So there are coordinators for the children's costumes, coordinators for the adult costumes, the gentleman's costumes we rent from a local place here. And the women's costumes are all made and designed by friends of the school or by parents who are excellent sewers and creative sewers and who invest the time in studying what an 1894-6 woman's evening outfit would look like. The children's costumes, for the children's guests, many are secondhand, coming from Goodwill, little bridesmaids' dresses that we dye, that we spruce up, we add lace, we make them period proper. The tutus, we've had a tremendous amount of help from Caroline, and her last name escapes me, but she used to be the tutu maker for Caroline O'Brien, the tutu maker for the National Ballet, and she helped our master seamstress how to construct a real tutu, and so our tutu department is expanding and making more. So from costume coordinators and sewers, that goes down to hand sewers. And at the moment, if you come into the school, you see any parent that it will be stitching away. We have a lovely man who is not even a parent of a performer, and he is a professional, well, he is a period fencer and fighter and makes his period costumes, and he is stitching away on a woman's tutu costume. It's wow. Just delightful.
I think I passed through your studio during that time, and I can really say the place is pretty interesting.
It's
with
buzzy.
Costumes everywhere. It's very lively. Yeah. It's actually nice because it gives that Christmas spirit early on in the month, right?
It does. It does, yeah. And so parents, well, they participate in many ways. There's a parent who will, when both her daughters are coming into dance and the kids are spending like up to 5 hours on a Sunday, she will come and she will bring bags of mandarins and pizza and home-cooked food, and everybody can dig in. And then you find out that parents start to take turns and the kids get fed. Well, not with garbage food.
It's like a family.
Again, it helps. It is a family. It's very unique.
Big family.
And then just with all that sweet, soft underbelly feeling, there is a high level of professionalism in the whole show and in the whole experience. And that is really, it's a unique combination that we can accomplish both.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
And I like just like the atmosphere, hearing the babies crying, the children and their grandparents talking about it, pointing out things. And one last question to you guys. How does it feel being on the stage like that in front of audience members that you know, your parents, probably grandparents, just everybody? How does it feel to you when you're performing?
I feel that I really have like a little joy in my stomach because, I guess you could say, because people are watching you and they're enjoying it, and it really feels good when people are enjoying something, especially around a nice holiday. Yeah.
I guess you can connect more to the audience, and it gives you, it's easier to play off of, especially in roles like the jester, when you're really trying to, I don't know, make the audience laugh or be that character. It's nice to hear their reactions, like in the party scene, if the head maid is doing something silly and you hear the audience laugh, or later on in, when the Russian dancers are performing and everyone's clapping, it really connects the audience with the performers, and it's the energy is great.
Yes.
Do you still get nervous when you go on stage?
I think everyone probably still gets nervous. I don't think that ever goes away, that's but it's nervousness and excitement.
That's good.
Okay, Alpia, any last words on the Nutcracker?
Any last words?
Then everybody
no.
should definitely go.
Well,
I feel like
everybody should
never experience.
Definitely go. It is magical, and I know that it's working. When many times during a rehearsal, I start to feel little ripples going up and down my spine. And when there are moments at the end, and everybody in the studio feels that. The first time that the Nutcracker, who's now the prince in the Land of Sweets, comes back, and for the first time in the process of building the story, comes and gives the Nutcracker to Clara and Fritz. If you get a little choked up, then it's going to be good. So.
Okay, now this all that's takes right. place at Lismore Hall, Humberside Collegiate. That's 280 Quebec Avenue in the High Park area.
Yes.
And adults are $15 to $40, children, students, seniors, 15 and up. They takes place Thursday, December 15th, 7:30, Friday, December the 16th, 7:30, and Saturday and Sunday matinees at 2 p.m. And you have a site, and it's piabaumanschool.org. And Bauman is Bouman school.org.
We would like to give two tickets away, Ted.
Oh, okay.
Okay,
that's great. The number to call is 416-946-7000. That's 416-946-7000 if you want tickets for the Nutcracker. And I'd like to thank you all for coming
on. Two tickets.
Two tickets. Oh, a pair? Yeah.
Well, yeah.
That's bad. Yeah.
Yeah, so the school would like to say to the listeners to CIUT that someone who calls here could get a ticket to see the show.
Okay.
Yep. That's great.
Great. Yes.
Call in.
Call in, yes. 946-7000. Okay, coming up, Erin Dace Trudell. She'll also be talking about children and babies. She's got a company called Mama Dances in Montreal, and she'll also be talking about her ATC technique. That's a series, 808 series of classes that they give all year on the Skinner release. We'll be right back here on Evidence on CIUT 89.5 FM.
From the roots up, CIUT 89.5 FM, Toronto, presenting the history and evolution of sound for 25 years and counting. CIUT 89.5 FM, Toronto.
And welcome back to to Evie Dance on CIUT. There you go. I was going to go into autopilot there, Roshanik. I am Andrea Duff.
And I'm Roshanik Jouberry.
We were just talking to Pia Bauman about her 26th run of the Nutcracker at her studio, which is mind-blowing to me.
26 years is a long time.
It's a really long time. I mean, it's a classic piece, but it's a long time. And up next we have Erin Dace Trudel. She's in Montreal because she's not feeling well. Yeah, so she's a bit worried about her voice, but we're going to be fine. She's going to be talking about her Skinner release technique and also her mama dance classes. Hello, Erin, are you there?
Hi, I am here.
Oh, excellent. So you're coming through loud and clear.
I'm not in Montreal because I'm sick. I'm not planning on coming to Toronto until Tuesday. My classes start on Wednesday.
I thought I'd kept you. I thought I'd kept you. My mistake. So you're coming to Toronto on Tuesday?
Yes.
Because you are doing a workshop with Series 808 ATC, Alternative Technique Classes.
Yeah, they've invited me to come and teach. Well, it will be a combination of Skinner Releasing Technique and Contact Improvisation, which I have titled Deepening.
The combination of the both you call Deepening?
That's right, yes. Oh.
And let's talk about the Skinner Release Technique and how you got started with that.
Oh, then we have to go a long time back.
Let's go way back.
We have time.
Yeah, we have to go way back. Let's see. Stephanie Skura is a choreographer in New York who actually kind of left her life in New York in order to go and study with Joan Skinner in Seattle. Joan Skinner is the founder of the technique.
Okay.
And she is, in the generation of, one generation before Steve Paxton, who's the creator of Contact Improvisation. Mm-hmm. Anyway, Stephanie went, which is a big thing, to leave one's career and home to go and study with a teacher. That's something.
Yes.
So I was aware of that big move because I was aware of Stephanie Skura, and I was living in New York at that time. Mm-hmm. And Stephanie Skura was one of the hot choreographers on the scene. So the fact that she just up and left to follow Joan Skinner to Seattle was really saying something. Then I came to Toronto, and Andrea Smith was presenting Joan Skinner. Andrea Smith is one of the founders of Dance Makers. She's one of the four women who founded Dance Makers, as well as a... Who are they? Peggy Baker and Carol. Oh, help me out here.
Carolyn, not Carolyn Reed.
No,
because
Carol.
Carol Anderson.
Anderson.
Yes,
thank you. Yeah. And Pat Miner.
Yes,
I think.
Pat Miner. Yeah. Patricia. Pat Fraser. Was she involved in the beginnings as well?
I don't know. Is it Pat Fraser or Pat Miner? I didn't do my dance history in Canada.
They were both involved.
I did my dance history in the United States.
Yeah, fair enough,
anyway,
but they were both involved,
Dance Makers was started by a collective of women, and Andrea Smith was one of them. And she was bringing in very interesting teachers to present alternative training concepts and ideas to the community in Toronto. And one of those was Skinner Releasing Technique. So I took that class with Joan Skinner, and I just connected with it immediately because I was always and have been always and still am a choreographer and a dancer at once. Throughout my dance, my career, those two things have gone hand in hand. They've, been mutual parts of my dancing life. So... that technique really clicked with me because it's a technique. It's both a dance technique for improving technical virtuosity, capacity, flexibility, control, articulation, but it also teaches creativity and creative process. And that's the only time that I encountered a dance technique that fully appreciates the creative spirit of the dancer.
Oh.
Now, for this particular workshop, how do you bridge contact and this particular technique?
It's a good question. Both of the techniques are similar in that they are accessible to people despite their level of dance experience. contact improvisation is a practice. It's actually not a technique. It's a practice, and it's a practice and an ongoing research, which is open to anyone who's interested in doing that. So any ability level is welcome. So you have communities of ages ranging from, you know, people dancing with their babies to people who are very well advanced in age, seniors, and even people with limited capacities of movement, disabled. So it's a very all-encompassing dance practice. Mm-hmm. And Skinner releasing technique is one of the only techniques that I know that it also encompasses all levels of experience in dance. So you can have a very, very advanced dancer and a very inexperienced dancer in the same class, and they will both have not similar, they'll have very different experiences, but they will both gain a lot from the class. Does that make sense?
Yes.
I'm trying to get a visual of what the class would be like. Like, how do you just sort of guide me through what a class and what some of the practices or how you facilitate a class like that? Especially with, you know, different...
Do you mean the merging of them or each one of them in particular?
The merging of them, you know, and especially with so many different bodies and experiences and levels, how do you sort of pull it all together?
Well, I think that one would have to kind of understand what the two techniques are before we start talking about the merging of them. Do you think that your listeners know what contact improvisation is?
Let's assume they don't.
Okay.
Yes.
Okay. Yeah.
That's why I wanted you to guide us through.
Okay. So I'll talk about the non-dancers. Okay. So contact improvisation is a combination of a sport and an artistic practice.
Okay.
It's like a combination of martial arts and tango. It is a practice which is based on the two bodies in contact, and that point, the point of contact between those two bodies, creates a what we call the rolling ball of contact, and that ball, when the two masses of the two bodies fall towards each other, lean towards each other, because the bodies are generally round, those two masses begin to roll. So the two masses, in combination with the force of gravity, in falling, begin to gather momentum.
Okay.
And that momentum is what gives us the impulse for the dance.
Okay.
So it can be very, very, it can be very, very poetic and delicate, and it can also be very acrobatic and athletic. It really depends on the dancer, the dancers who are dancing.
Is there ever a struggle if the two people who are dancing together have different energy, or is that a factor?
Well, that's always the challenge, is to meet, is to figure out who within the dance, is to find out, to discover who we're dancing with.
Right.
And what we have in common, what is our shared language together. To find a shared language physically is, it's a wonderfully, it's a wonderful skill to learn, to be able to communicate without words,
mm-hmm.
very transparently, and to learn who a person is through touch.
And so there's sort of always an exchange of who's the leader, quote unquote, and who's the follower, and I guess like those lines get blurry eventually, is the ideal. I'm thinking about it like in regards to tango.
Yeah, usually the tendency is that, you know, one person is probably more passive or complicitous, mm-hmm. and another person is more active. Usually when you have two people together, that's the way it works, with the different personalities together. But eventually, those energies become unified, so that after the experience of dancing with someone for a little while, the motivation becomes completely balanced, and it's like two people dancing as one.
And do you find in your experience that working with non-dancers is easier than working with dancers or vice versa, in terms of getting out of their head and feeling the movement more, the energy of the movement?
I can't say because I think it really has to do with personality and training. I can't say, you know, professional dancers or non-dancers, because there are some non-dancers who have lots of different kind of body awareness trainings, like if they're massage therapists, mm-hmm. or if they've come from acrobatics, or if they've come from martial arts.
Yeah.
It really depends, and that's why skinner releasing is so interesting, actually, because skinner releasing is a technique, a dance technique, which is taught through the use of imagery.
Oh.
And so the training is about concepts or images entering into the body, well, first through the listening, you know, the listening center, and then kind of planting seeds of awareness into the body, and then the dance growing from that very... from having received an image in a very subconscious state, in an altered conscious state.
And if, for simplicity's sake, if we were to say that contact improv is a partner dance, is Skinner mm-hmm. release an individual practice?
Well, you don't dance with partners in Skinner releasing. I think Skinner releasing is the best technique to prepare for contact improvisation.
Oh, okay.
Because it's a kinesthetic training, meaning it's an awareness training. So it comes from its basis fundamentals come from Alexander technique, which is a technique about becoming aware of what's going on in the physical self. So being aware of holding patterns. So a lot of times injuries are caused by repetitive stress in a particular part of the body, which we've been ignoring for a long time, and we're not aware it's there until we injure ourselves.
Right.
So Skinner releasing and Alexander, the idea is that if you take some time to bring your awareness to the physical self, to what's going on, and noticing if there's any holding patterns, then we can prevent and avoid injury, and we can also find very efficient patterns of movement for cultivating the maximum amount of freedom of movement possible. And that includes the way we think about ourselves as mm-hmm. well. It's not just physical. That's why I say the physical self, because it's not just about our physical capacity, but it's also about what we think we can do.
Right. So these deepening classes, mm-hmm. They're taking place at Dover Courthouse this week, from the 7th
yeah,
to the 10th,
yeah,
4 days.
It's being organized by the 808, Series 808.
Yes.
So all the information is on the Series 808 website,
yeah,
which is series808.ca, and the classes are Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, and Saturday.
And that's the part of the Alternative Technique Program, which I think is excellent. And the other thing that you're involved in is Mama Dances.
Yeah, Mama Dances. I know it. I'm doing so much now. It's really crazy.
Are you a mom yourself?
Yeah.
And so
shortly after I moved from Toronto to Montreal, I had my first child. My first and only child.
Oh, okay.
So she's now six.
And
so I moved from Toronto in 2003.
Mm-hmm.
Like between 2003 and 2004, I was working both in Toronto and in Montreal.
Right. And now, was she the spark for this Mama Dances exploration?
Yeah. But she wasn't the first. I mean, of course she was. She inspired me to put together the whole concept as it is today. But the first inspiration was actually when I was at Earth Dance, and I was doing a workshop with Andrew Harwood and Chris Aiken. It was called Opening to the Unknown. Ironically, and there was a soiree, an evening where all the participants offered to do a little performance for each other,
mm-hmm.
and there was one dancer who was participating in the workshop, and she had a 2-year-old, and her planned performance was a duet with another dancer, and ironically, as always happens when you're a parent, things didn't happen like she thought they would.
Right.
First of all, her dancer got sick and wasn't able to join her. So that was fine. Then she was going to do it as a solo. But then her babysitter got sick and wasn't able to babysit her child. So
of
she
course.
Had to bring her 2-year-old to the performance. The 2-year-old was distracting to no end. I mean, it was incessant. People tried to take the child out in the hallway, but in the hallway we could hear the child crying, and this poor mother was on stage trying to do her performance, and of course everybody was just thinking about her child. So finally she just went and got her child, right? And she brought the child up on the stage.
Oh.
And what happened afterward was the most beautiful dance I have ever seen in my life. It was so real and so exciting to see the dynamic tension and the physical closeness between them. The child was trying to take over attention, so it was interesting to see the mother and the child in the space together. But at one point, there was an open window close to the stage, and at one point the child went towards the window. And so the mother is dancing on the stage, and we're all sort of watching this child get closer and closer and closer to the window. And, you know, you think that the mother is not noticing, but then in the very last moment, she crosses over to the stage very gracefully, you know, takes the child in her arms just in the nick of time before he climbs out the window.
Oh, my God.
Puts him on her hip and starts doing the rest of the choreography with him sitting on her hip. Of course, accentuating the movements of her pelvis.
Right.
And it was gorgeous. I mean, it was moving on every level for me, you know, the tension, the difficulty between autonomy, having your own autonomy as a mother, and also that that pull, that compassion, that need to physically be with your child and your child with you. So then when I had my own child, I remembered that performance.
Yes.
And I thought, I wonder if I could recreate something like that. So Mama Dances started as a choreography with six professional dancers dancing with their babies in the festival Salles Atlantique here in Montreal.
Excellent.
Now, how do you find being a mom, how has it affected or changed your dancing, your approach to dance, and the way you connect to your body?
Well, one of the things that's changed is I don't really perform anymore. I perform only contact improvisation. It's been very I think that I don't have, there's nothing that is attracting me right now to doing any sort of set choreography, because mm-hmm. life becomes very, very unpredictable, you know?
Yes.
My body is more unpredictable than it was before. I severely injured my lower back. I have a slightly herniated disc, and that was from trying to go back to dancing, because I had a dance contract 7 weeks after my child was born.
Oh my gosh.
A dance contract, and I was trying to get myself ready, trying to get myself back into a dancing state, and I hurt my back. That was too soon for
yes.
me to be getting back to dancing. And so now my body is, well, at this point, it's at a state where I can't force myself to do choreography that I don't choose myself, you know?
Yes.
So I'm not an interprete anymore. I'm really concentrating on teaching and dance and contact improvisation, which means that in any moment when I'm performing, I can choose to do whatever movement I want to do. So I guess the conclusion would be that I'm listening to my body more about what satisfies me in terms of the quality of my life, you know, having security, both financial and with my calendar, you know?
Mm-hmm,
does that
yes.
make sense to you?
Yes.
Because as a professional dancer, you know, it's so unpredictable when you're going to have work and what kind of work you're going to do. I mean, even when you go into a creative process with a choreographer, you know, you have less choice about the kind of vocabulary you're going to do.
Yeah. Oh, absolutely. Yeah.
And I think that's why I really like this program, because it's an opportunity for dancers to sort of continue their career after childbirth. A lot of us sort of think, okay, you know, it's either a choice, you're a dancer or you become a mom. And so it's great to see that there are programs like this out there where, you know, a dancer can continue dancing, but just with a different perspective, and also just including their children in the practice.
Oh, well, there's a huge philosophy, yeah, behind all that, certainly. And I don't mean to be insulting, but I find that the role of the woman on the contemporary dance stage is very superficial.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought that it would be interesting to put the real maternal role on the stage, because when a person becomes a mother, there's something that strengthens the spirit, I think. You know, you have to become stronger as a person. Your identity has to become stronger in order to parent. And so I think what happens often in contemporary dance or in professional dance is that when a woman matures through becoming a parent, she's less willing to play some of the roles that are required of her on the current contemporary dance stage.
Yes. Erin, thank you so much for talking with us. We have to wrap it up. There was a lot to talk about, and time ran out.
Yeah.
But thank you so much for being with us, and I know you're not feeling well, but...